there was a line of police. The commanding officer was behind them, and there's a particular sort of clown thing that people had started doing, taking out of the training, which was, hey, let's all do whatever, you know, oh yes, let's all run away, or whatever it was. And he looked me in the eye and he went, let's all follow the clowns. And I sort of looked at him and I went, you've got it, haven't you? And he went, yes, I do, I have. And I was like, are you going to come and join us? And he's like, well, I'm considering it.
During the first decade that I worked in comedy, I never gave clowning much thought. Clowns seemed very far away from the cutting edge of laughter where me and my fellow 20-something stand-up comedians and satirists fondly imagine we worked. But 10 years ago, I read about the Native American clowns of the Pueblos of the southwestern deserts, who seemed to have a moral and social function in their world, and I started to change my mind. Last week, I went to Taos Pueblo and saw a Pueblo clown ritual, where the values of the village were temporarily overturned and all its fears were exposed. I concluded that the Pueblo clowns represented the pure heart of what clowning, and all comedy in general, could and possibly should be about. But I'm not convinced that there are any modern clowns, close to home, that have the same sense of purpose. The clandestine insurgent rebel clown army, or Circa, would disagree. They first came to public attention after launching giant pink pretzels through a cannon during President Bush's visit to the UK in 2003, and they'd become a regular fixture of the global protest movement.
What's over there?
Israel!
What's next to Israel?
Palestine!
What's in Palestine?
The Israelis!
What's in the Israelis?
Circa says it aims to make clowning dangerous again, to bring it back to the street, restore its disobedience, and give it back the powers it once had to disrupt, critique, and heal society. They maintain that the trickster figures of myth and legend always embrace life's paradoxes, creating coherence through confusion, adding disorder to the world in order to expose its lies and speak the truth. Ought not clowns to continue this tradition?
I mean, as a protester, mostly one's audience tend to be the police rather than anybody else, because they tend to be between you and everything else that's going on. They just sort of... But there was something about kind of like rehumanising them, making them on the same level as me. And there was a beautiful moment actually with Zoe where we'd been sectioned in by the police. I'd already been up to this... Well, my clown had already been up to this policeman and gone, oh, hello, haven't you just got the loveliest blue eyes? I like a man in uniform, you know. And he was just so embarrassed because obviously all his mates are looking at him and giggling.
Yeah. When you get ringed in by the police or hemmed in, do you feel like that's kind of created a performance space?
Yeah, it's kind of boring, actually, being contained, you know, because we're not about performance. Mm. That's not what it's for. It's actually to change the world. That's what the whole point is.
You know, I have a shaved head and all these earrings, so the makeup had to cover my whole head, so I wanted to be all white, like, you know, just clown white, ghosty white.
Based in LA, Michael Perrick, alias Fucko, is another clown who feels he has a purpose other than simply to entertain. He confronts and assaults his audience.
One of the taboos in clown makeup is sharp lines, because sharp lines are supposed to be scary. So I made my eyebrows blocks, very sharp, just blocks. And the other thing is that no black outlining. It's pretty much outlawed in circus clowning, because again, it's scary. So all my makeup, my mouth, and my eyebrows are heavy black outlined. So
even within the world of clowns, you feel obliged to confront the taboos of clowning.
Oh yes, yeah. Definitely.
The clown wears the smallest mask in the world, which is their nose. And that can even just be painted on. It doesn't...
In fact, you don't even need the nose. It's all in the eyes.
Yeah.
That's one of the key things about the
eyes. Eyes.
It's about looking people in the eyes, and it's about making that connection on a much deeper level than you're able to through words or even sometimes through touch or whatever. Mm. It's just straight.
Well, that's really interesting, because when we were in Taos Pueblo, I found instinctively that I couldn't... I deliberately tried to not make eye contact with the clowns. So I thought if they made eye contact with me, I would be targeted.
You can hear the rain falling down. I'm on the corner of Haggerston Road in a little square in Hackney in East London, at the All Saints Community Centre, which looks pretty normal from outside, but houses the headquarters of Clowns International and the Clown Gallery and Museum. So we'll go in out of the rain. And we've come in out of that rainy square in Hackney into this amazing room. Your spirits, you feel like you lift as you come in here. There are full-size mannequins of clowns through the ages. There's all these display cabinets of different clown ephemera, statues of clowns. There are a huge collection of posters. There's a fantastic tiny clown car, one that I hope has been diffused because they have a tendency to explode, as we know. There are collections of photographs of clowns through the ages, puppets of clowns, all sorts of circus props. Then all along the walls, these amazing collections of eggs painted with the faces of different clowns, which serve as a kind of record of all the different ways that you can make up a clown face. It's an incredible room to walk into. In this community centre, in this little square, you wouldn't imagine it could be here. I'm meeting two clowns, Ginger Nut and Matty, but in their human guises of Ian Tom and Matty Faint.
Well, there was an even larger collection than this.
Yeah, obviously.
The rest are gone.
Well, or they're
the rest have been
famously
broken.
Fragile eggs.
The whole reason you wear makeup is to be seen at a distance.
Right.
In the ring.
It's then not a mask.
Yeah.
It's a living, moving thing, which your face is. It's not a mask to hide behind, it's a window to look through.
A window to look
That's
through.
That's beautifully said.
It is. And it's another thing that a lot of
Well, we don't hide behind the makeup. The reason why, say, a clown like Ronald McDonald doesn't carry terribly well is that the Ronald McDonald concept was done as a flat drawing first, as an advertising cartoon, and then they transferred that flat cartoon onto a human face, which is obviously not flat.
Yeah, sort of reverse engineered.
So it's reverse engineering, and it doesn't always work on some of the faces of the people that they have doing Ronald.
The word clown comes into the British theatrical tradition with the Renaissance, with the first, therefore, professional theatrical entertainment.
Jackie Bratton is the author of The Victorian Clown, and she makes a case for the importance and the transgressive, lawless nature of early clowning, and reminds us that whatever we think of clowns today, the craft has real, deep and disruptive roots.
He is a kind of loose canon within that, because very often in a Renaissance text you'll find that there is a page that says the clowns enter here, or the enter clown, and no words. He makes it up for himself. He does his own act in the middle of the play by Marlowe or whoever it is. Shakespeare took to writing the clowns in so that you get the Fool in Lear, Feste in Twelfth Night. And they're called clown, apparently, initially, because that is a word for country booby, rustic, unsophisticated person. And that is comical, that is to be laughed at. And that was what they did. They did crudely physical things. But of course, as they get built into the plays, it becomes clear that some of them, at least, are not just able to dance and run about, sort of blubbering their lips and so forth. They tell jokes. So the whole of the theatrical tradition of stand-up comedy, of all sorts of comic sketches and so forth, is there in embryo in the professional entertainer who is made part of the first professional theatre companies.
The 16th century Commedia dell'arte were, as far as we know, the first troupe to perform solely as clowns. They had a repertoire of specific characters, of Harlequin, Pulcinella, and established the template of the clown in European popular culture, and this was subsequently adapted and mutated by the many hands that inherited it into more recognisably modern clown archetypes, such as the Pierrot, the Auguste, the Stooge.
By the 18th century, there are thriving clown traditions that are not happening within the theatre, but are happening in the fairgrounds. There would be clowns fooling about, just playing physical tricks, slapstick. And that becomes a very British figure. He's called things like Jack Pudding. His characteristic laughable feature is his physicality, really. He is the slave of appetite, mostly greed, but also sex. He just does rude things of one sort or another. He's the embodiment of body, if you like, as opposed to mind.
And when that gets onto the stage, which reckons itself to be moral and uplifting and instructional, it's always a bit iffy. The presence of the fairground clown or the circus clown on the stage at Drury Lane always creates a kind of outburst of critical protest. What on earth have we come to? You know, this classic boards invaded by the clown. The edginess of the clown's presence on the legitimate stage doing pantomime at Drury Lane, intervening in theatrical entertainment meant for an adult audience. The theatre is not a terribly safe place. You go there if you're robust enough to be challenged and intelligent enough to think that's entertaining. And you might get laughed at, and you might get your pocket picked, and you might find you're sitting next to somebody you wouldn't wish to sit next to, a tradesman who's somehow or other got a cheap ticket, come in at half price, or, heaven forfend, a lady of the night, because there was a strong link between organised prostitution and the theatres of London right up to the 1830s, 1840s.
Michael Perrick started out as a clown in a troupe called Cacophony in Los Angeles, and this clown collective might be evidence of a wider trend of back-to-basics clowning with their shocking clown sex parties and unauthorised office space entertainments. Michael feels compelled to bring inappropriate comic ideas into areas where they're not welcome.
The LA Cacophony is a group of just people who get together and do whacked out things. Mm-hmm. And it was all about poking people in the ribs.
Right. What were some examples of stuff that you'd done kind of collectively with that?
It started off by covering our cars in mud and driving around Beverly Hills. For some reason, people really were upset about that.
Yeah.
Putting dog statues in the dog park with weird plaques on it. And people got very upset with that, too. Well,
what sort of things were on the plaques then?
It just said, for all the dogs that died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it turned into this, like, big news article. I mean, just, it turned into such a hoopla. Somebody actually was quoted saying, "I come to the park with my dog, and this is a political statement. My dog should not be subjected to such leftist political statements such as this." Yeah. You know, it's just like, oh.
Are there things that you personally wanted to do that you can't, but you're able to do as the clown character?
Oh, I would say most everything.
So is there a situation where you thought, I really wish I could have done this here, and you haven't been able to, and you've gone back as the clown and done it?
Yeah. There are a lot of things. You have amazing, the makeup, the costume gives you amazing freedom. You can get on your hands and knees and go around sniffing people's butts. You can go up to a girl and put your hand in her crotch and say, "Hey baby, can I take your temperature?" Mm. And she's going to go, "Oh!" Whereas if you were in regular dress, she'd beat the shit out of you. Mm. You know. So I've walked up to police officers and said, "Hey pig boy!"
Yeah.
You know, and they're just like laughing.
So what is it about the makeup and the costume that legitimizes that then, do you think?
Because it takes you out of society.
Mm.
It takes you out of being a person doing it and being a character doing it. And that character is, in a sense, entertainment. That character is not necessarily responsible for the actions of the person doing it, because it's a character.
I've actually found it quite liberating to, in parody and in character as clown, sort of indulge that greed and the hunger for power. And my clown wants to be the centre of attention. The difference for me as a sort of protester, I guess, is between normally when asked who's in charge, everyone goes, "Oh, well, no one's in charge," and, you know, "Oh, we're autonomous, it's all horizontal." You ask a bunch of clowns who's in charge, they're all
me,
in charge.
I'm in charge. Hey.
And so is my wife.
Yeah. Yes.
So are there things that have come out of doing the clowning that have changed the way you behave in everyday life, or don't you see the separation anymore? Is it too late for you to go back?
Oh, yes.
It's true, it's transformative.
It is transformative, yeah.
As in blessed, you know, I mean, the silly sheep in the Bible and all that. It's a blessed state as well.
Blessed? Well, a blessed what, like a sacred clown?
Yeah, I think it goes that way.
Yeah. If you spell sacred a different way, it's scared.
Yeah.
Which, or scarred.
Yeah,
all these things.
They're like that.
Hang on! Oh, Brains on the righteous as well as the unrighteous. Oh, right, that's not going to make you a fortune. Maybe if I could... Ooh. Maybe if I could just balance the box on top of the lock. And me on top of the box. On top of the...
Rowley Bain performs in less volatile situations than the Rebel Clown Army, but he's no less bold than them. Rowley's both a vicar and a clown, albeit another clown with a purpose.
Most religions have their fools, their fool figures. Because of that whole thing about the fool doesn't look as though he's wise, but is, and has great powers. I mean, lots of religions have got this idea of the fool is the messenger between man and the gods, whatever those gods may be. Mm. So clowns used to be revered. I mean, even the village idiot used to be revered. He's not now. He's locked away. I think part of the problem of today's religions is that they take themselves so seriously that we lose the fool figure and therefore lose the point of faith. I mean, I think people coming to faith, it's like getting the joke, really. You have to allow them to get the joke for themselves.
Have there been times when, despite the kind of protective aura of makeup and costume, you have ended up in trouble?
Actually, yeah. Only once. There was a man who was obviously very afraid of clowns, and I was bothering him, and he ran away. But he came back later and started punching me, and he actually physically assaulted me. Several people had to pull him off because I had forced him to confront a fear. He got very angry. You come across a lot of people who are terrified of clowns, but most of them have the fear reaction and run away. Very few people actually have the violent reaction.
Are people frightened of clowns because there's been 50 years of horror films in which, you know, there's a clown murderer or a clown doll gets possessed? Or are they afraid of clowns because they're afraid that you're going to reveal something about them?
That's part of it. It's the character, it's the makeup, it's not being able to see the person's real face.
And earlier on over there, I saw you were talking about slapstick whilst holding a stick with slap written on it.
Yes.
What is the slapstick?
Well, it's basically two strips of wood separated by a third piece of wood, and when pressed together,
we'll hear it now.
Here it is. A slapstick.
It's kind of like two skis, isn't it? Yes. Two skis pressed together and then it kind of snaps.
And originally formed in the days of the Commedia. Two people would have this on stage and... Sorry. Everybody's just jumped out of their radio now.
Yeah. But actually, all the images of clowns that you see, there's always people hitting each other with stuff, whether it's bladders on sticks.
Yes.
Or, I mean, in the Pueblo clowns, there tended to be huge phalluses they were going to be bashing each other with. Yeah.
Which oh, I've never done that.
No, it wouldn't be appropriate.
No, not really.
You've got this big sort of colourful phallic thing coming out of you with all kind of clown-coloured rags tied around it and a kind of red stripy end to it. So this sort of image turns up in the kind of anthropology of clowning going back thousands of years. This giant phallic thing was...
You know, I like this whole idea of a large phallus that you can poke people with. But then I wanted something that was soft so I could whack them over the head with it and they wouldn't scream. And then when I was thinking about it, it is something that is used a lot. You know, a lot of comedy and a lot of those clown characters have always had the type of bopper type of thing, and we started work on an actual inflatable phallus that would come out of my pants and spit fireworks. It would inflate this thing that would go out to about 4 feet, and we wanted it to look like a giant American flag so that people would salute it.
Right, that's ideal, isn't it?
In the 19th century, the clown became a chief attraction in the newly invented circus, as well as being a common and unpredictable feature of entertainment in the theatre. But in the Victorian age, the demands of the modern marketplace began to reshape the role of the clown. Jackie Bratton.
The attempt to make the theatre respectable, to match its audience, very firmly locks out improvised entertainment, for a start. The manager really wants to know what's going to be said on his stage. He really wants to know that nobody in the boxes is suddenly going to take exception to something that happens in the pantomime. During the early decades of the 19th century, when the great clown was Joe Grimaldi, somebody at Drury Lane, having failed to hire Grimaldi, thought, oh, well, there's another clown at Sadler's Wells, have him, his name was Bradbury. So this Bradbury guy comes down from Sadler's Wells, but actually previous to that from the circus. He is expected to do topical humour, and the topical humour that's been picked on for this particular pantomime is about gentlemen whips. Young men with a great deal more money than sense who dress themselves up as coachmen and drive very fast through the countryside with mail coaches or with their own little equipages. And it's the kind of equivalent of modern young men and Porsches, really. And they dress themselves up in these ludicrous costumes to do it. That Bradbury comes on wearing one of these costumes, carrying a whip and making silly jokes. And it goes down like a lead balloon. Because, of course, the gentlemen in the boxes do this sort of thing. It's satire aimed very personally at them. And what happens on about the third or fourth night of the pantomime is that a man stands up, major somebody or other, stands up in one of the boxes and says, I object to this. What he actually claims he is objecting to is the introduction of some news story not connected, not at all connected with the whip craze into the pantomime, some other news story. And the clown enlists the rest of the house and the cast to send him up. And there is a complete furore and scandal about this. Not only is Bradbury sacked, but the whole pantomime is taken off and a new one is rehearsed, and which doesn't include the satire on the whips.
Lots of words can be magical. Judah, one. Alakazam, yes, that's a good one. Good Alakazam. Any more? Need some more? Need three. Three magic words. Abracadabra, there's a nice religious one, thank you.
Where did you get the basic kind of shape of your clown drama? Is it based on a person that you know or yourself?
It's based on me. Yeah. I mean, it has to be based on me. Any clown must be based. But in the end, if you're going to be a truth teller, you have to be truthful to yourself to have any integrity and to speak of truth at all. So it's from me. I think anyone who wants to be a clown has to find those probably fairly absurd bits of themselves, and that's where you start from.
Basically, the character is my father.
Your clown is based on your father?
Yeah, my father's from the Bronx. You know, big guy, genius, but just really gruff and, hey, get out of my face, you know, sort of guy.
That's really interesting what you're saying about your father, because my father said a lot of incredibly inappropriate, politically incorrect things at entirely the wrong time.
Yeah.
And I've often tried to sort of talk about them on stage as a stand-up, but the actual sentences that he said are so utterly unacceptable. There's no way of doing it without people just assuming you are actually a racist. But he's an authority figure, but you've dressed as him and you've used the sort of things he would say in public situations where they suddenly become funny rather than threatening or embarrassing. Is that, you know, it's like you've defeated that memory.
Exactly. It's actually rather funny because my girlfriend actually does not like the character.
But there are photos of her interacting
with you. She's performed with it.
In a fairly intimate way during the clown sex party.
Yeah.
She's obviously not that uncomfortable with it.
Well, she has become very uncomfortable because the character of the clown is not necessarily someone who she wants to be sleeping with.
It's your father.
Exactly.
A whole another can of worms.
Oh,
isn't it?
God. It'd just be terrible. My ex-girlfriends used to say, your dad's trying to look up my skirt. And I'm like, yeah, I know.
Well, that's really interesting. You did that as the clown.
Want to hear something funny? When I did my clown character around my dad, he freaked out. He had an absolute panic attack. He wouldn't let me near him. He started to laugh, and then he got uncomfortable, and the next thing I know, he was in his car driving away.
He drove away from me.
Michael Perrick's clowning provokes strong reactions and, sometimes, hasty exits. When clowns are in conflict with established ideas, accepted truths, or even, in more literal terms, with the hired hands of government, it seems that they're still protected by our almost subconscious respect for the power of the clown.
You're aware, presumably, on some level, that it's going to look really bad in the papers if there's film of police attacking clowns. I mean, they almost come a kind of PR angle. They have to get away. That's just, it's just profoundly upsetting to see a clown being hurt.
I have to admit, having recently been arrested in clown, that it was unfortunate for the arresting officers, because as they took me into the police station, each police station we kept being transferred, all their colleagues cracked up laughing, and they became laughing stuff with their colleagues.
Yeah. It was a really lovely moment, actually, when we walked in, and for some reason I was walking up the stairs first to the front desk, and I walked in, and I was just like, okay, I've got some police officers here for you, to the policeman at the front desk, and their faces were just the absolute picture, because they were just like, it was a moment that was just so confused. It was great.
Last week, when I travelled to New Mexico, I began to understand the idea that clowning, the ancient template of comedy in its most pure form, could mean something rather more than it might first appear to. Clowning could create confusion and chaos and cause questions to be asked that could maintain or undermine the societies it served. And here at home too, beneath the masks of the clowns we grew up watching, you can still see traces of what has been lost. But after a round trip of 16,000 miles, I realised that as well as embodying profound and important qualities, clowning is also about something else, something you don't need to travel the world to discover, and something we all overlook at our peril. It's as plain as a red nose on a white face.
Laughter is an amazing thing, but it's something that we can't do on our own. And I've always felt the clown is the catalyst, because you actually finding a way to make that person laugh, and it's such a magical thing to do. You know, Charlie Chaplin said that laughter is the closest distance between two people. A day without laughter is a day wasted. If you laugh, your soul is lifted, and the lighter your soul, the happier you are in life.